This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
Ugh. You said you were over him, but his hoodie is still in your rotation. It's time. Grab your phone, snap a few pics, and sell it on Depop. List it in minutes with no selling fees. And just like that, a guy 500 miles away just paid full price for your closure. And right on cue.
Hey, still got my hoodie?
Nope. But I've got tonight's dinner paid for. Start selling on Depop, where taste recognizes taste. List now with no selling fees. Payment processing fees and boosting fees still apply. See website for details.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Wing and Tail Boys podcast, your Northeast hunting and fishing destination. I'm Chris.
And I'm Angelo.
And we're your hosts. Join us as we navigate the woods and waters of the Northeast, sharing our passion for the outdoors.
Whether it's land management, outdoor recreation, hunting, or fishing, we're going to cover it all. With 40 plus years of experience in the Northeast, we'll provide insights, tips, and stories to help you make the most of your adventures and help you experience the wild.
So, tune in, grab your gear, and let's hit the woods together. And always remember, success is just a commitment away. What's going on, guys? Thank you for joining us here for another episode of the Wing and Tail Boys podcast. It is Monday, April 14th, as I record this intro, and there is still no little girl home with us. That's not to say that she won't come before this episode airs. This episode will air on Thursday, as always, you know, but yesterday made 39 weeks. Everything is healthy. Everyone is good. Things are progressing smoothly as they should. So at this point, we're on little Lily's time, and whenever she's ready to get here, she'll get here. And when she does, I will be sure to notify you guys, update you, and let you know that, you know, she is here and all is good. With that being said, until then, things are just going to continue status quo. And today's episode is a really, really exciting one. We have Gerard joining us, the owner of Ratgetter Sense. Last week, I notified you guys that Ratgetter was the newest partner of the Wing and Tail Boys, Wing and Tail Outdoors brand. Gerard and I linked up about a year ago, maybe a little less than a year ago. And when we started this channel, our biggest goal, what we really, really wanted to strive to do, was to promote positive hunting practices in the Northeast, and specifically in the communities where we live or close to where we live. We really wanted to, A, showcase individuals, business owners, and stuff like that in the area. But and we also wanted to spread the word about hunting and get people to join us in what we enjoy and what they enjoy as well. So I had reached out to Gerard, I don't know, probably August of last year, give or take. And I told him, you know, exactly like I just told you about, you know, the whole local guys and everything. But I was upfront with him and I told him that we didn't want to just partner with someone who was willing to give us, you know, stuff to try or just because someone was willing to pay us. If we were going to partner with something, we really wanted to believe in their products. So Gerard was like, nope. Problem at all. And he gave me a whole bunch of products to try out, which I did over last hunting season. And we had some early pressure on our property. And to be honest with you, it was like a, how do I put it? It's not that we didn't have good results. We also didn't have the greatest at first. But once that pressure started to die down and the deer felt comfortable, the true potential of Rat Getter Sense really came out. So as of now, for those of you who are following on the Instagram, just about every single day, I have deer hitting the rat getter rope scrape area that I set up last year. And as the days go on, it is hit more and more and more and more. So I wanted to bring Gerard on for this episode to just kind of get to know him a little bit more and showcase him to you guys and let you see what Gerard and Rat Getter was all about. And after this conversation, seeing what his business model is, realizing that he's not the kind of guy who wants to just sell you something to make money and really just wants the best for his customers and success from his customers. And after both believing his product himself and his company, right after we recorded this episode is when I reached out to him and told him I would love for him to be the official lure attractant, whatever you want to call it, brand of Wing and Tail. And he was more than happy to join us. So with that being said, this episode is all about Rat Getter, but not in the sense that you guys might be used to. We've all heard the episodes on scents and lures about where to put them, when to put them, how to use them, blah, blah, blah. At this point, stuff like that has gotten redundant. So we really wanted to focus on some of the unique products that they have over at Rat Getter. But I also really wanted to, like I said, break down just who Gerard is as a person and who Rat Getter is as a brand and what they strive for. It was a really great conversation. I feel like I really got to know a lot about Gerard and kind of just the guy he is. And like I said, it made me really believe in him and his product even more. Unfortunately, there were some video issues, so there won't be any video associated with this recording, but the audio came through just fine. And I'm really excited to share it with you guys. Before we get started, just want to thank one more of our sponsors here. It is springtime. Spring food plots are upon us, and Vitalized Seed is the place to go to find the seed that you need for your property this year. There's really two options that you could have here in the spring, and they're both fantastic. You can throw down a perennial clover or an annual clover blend. They have two different blends. Both are going to work out great for you. And then if you're looking for a summer plot or a summer solution, look into their 1-2 punch nitro boost and the carbon load summer and fall respectively. They work together to create the perfect carbon to nitrogen ratio to help your soil break down nutrients, not only well, but at the right pace to give your soil the nutrients it needs when it needs it. So if you guys are in the market, you're looking for some seed for this spring or this summer, head on over to vitalizedseed.com today and check out what they have to offer. With that said, I got nothing else for you this week. So thanks again for joining us. Remember, success is just a commitment away. And now, Rat Getter Sense. What's going on today, guys? We are joined today by Gerard, the owner of Rat Getter Sense. How are you doing today, buddy?
How are you, buddy? How's everything?
Everything's going great, man. We were having a little conversation here before we started recording today, and I let you know that our little girl is on the way. Honestly, by the time this airs, she'll probably already be here.
That's cool.
Yeah, man.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. But we're recording this today, April 6th. It is early spring. The weather's been great. How you been, man? What have you been up to lately?
It's been busy.
A while since we talked.
Yeah, just so busy. You know, it's been a long time coming. We've been trying to do this for a while now, and you know, my schedule didn't match yours last year, so I'm glad to finally get on here with you and get this done. We've talked on the phone a few times, and I'm happy to get this done with you. And again, congratulations on your daughter coming. That's a special time. But man, I've been busy. I'm just crazy. You know, I get new stores. I'm traveling from store to store. I'm loading up stores with the mineral products of things and the salt licks and all that kind of stuff right now. And talking to other store owners and getting in other stores and having meetings with other owners. It's been crazy. And like we spoke before, you know, I got one son that plays college football, so he's even busy off season. I got another one that plays high school football, and now is playing lacrosse a full season. So I chased him from field to college to high school. I'm running all over the place. It's actually, I'm living a great life right now. I'm enjoying my time with my kids and enjoying all this sports activities, you know, but I'm really busy with the business, you know, new products, old products, and getting things ready for the for this upcoming season.
For sure. And we're definitely going to touch on that today. You know, we definitely want to talk about your business a little bit, but we're hoping to make this episode a little bit different than all of the other Scent Company episodes.
Thank you. Yes. Thank you. That's what I prefer to do that more than, you know, the business as we talked about, but
absolutely. You know,
I get it.
Yeah. I definitely want to talk about some of the stuff you have coming out, you know, some of the stuff that's been around for years, some of the new stuff. You have some really ingenious concepts that you've come up with on your own. You know, we'll see where it goes from there. You know, definitely want to hear about your story, how you got into hunting, and how you implement all this stuff as well, you know, in your hunting. But just to give the listeners a little bit of a background, we made it a point on our show here to try to showcase guys in our area. The whole point of us starting this podcast was we really didn't feel like the Northeast had a voice. You know, when you hear hunting and all these big shows and all these big time hunting names, you know, you hear guys from Iowa, Ohio, Wisconsin, you know, South Dakota. You hear about the whole Midwest and the beautiful hunting that's out there. But the truth is, we have some really great hunting opportunities here in Jersey as well.
You sure do.
You know, so in the early days, we were really trying to connect with some local guys, and you just happened to be the local scent guy right out of New Jersey. So why don't we kickstart this? Why don't you tell us a little bit about Rat Getter Scents and how it came to be? Obviously, you're a scent company, but how did you spawn the idea of Rat Getter Scents? You know, as we talked earlier today, in your 40s, you know, so it wasn't something you've been doing since day one. This is really something that you stumbled on along the way. So why don't you tell us your story?
A lot of factors came into the start of Rat Getter. And Rat Getter wasn't Rat Getter first. It was Jersey Boys Outdoors that I had originally started with a good friend of mine and a cousin.
Jersey Boys Outdoors. I love that.
Originally started out as, and it started out as like a, just a page that we started because they wanted to get into filming. And I really didn't want to do it, but they kind of talked me into it. So kind of worked out in that. And then we got hooked up with another company and things didn't work out there. And then it turned into the three of us starting a scent company. Then within a few months, they backed out. They didn't want to do it. They didn't want to do mail order. They didn't want to do this, that. So they said, it's all yours. Do what you want to do. And then I said, okay. In 2014, I changed the name to right after their, you know, the season ended. I changed the name to Rat Getter Scents in 2015. And ever since 2015, it's been that. So it's 11 years that we've been in business from 2014 with the guys to now myself for the last, 11 and to all the way till now. And it's been great. And it's been unique. And I've had a lot of fun with it. Coming from a huge hunting family. And I got two relatives that are still very much into hunting and fishing that I'm very close to. So it's just like when we were kids, but just added this adult business. And now I have another cousin who's going to start probably a podcast/show. So he's getting into it a little bit more. He's going to be getting away from what he's been doing for 40 years. And he wants to get more in depth in the hunting stuff. I got another cousin that's a huge fisherman that we're going to be doing a lot of live stuff. Striper fishing down the shore this year and fluke fishing. And we're going to probably incorporate some crabbing into it and things of that nature. I'm a huge trout fisherman. So I was out yesterday for opening day and I killed them. I was happy.
Was that picture you posted yesterday where you said opening day, good luck? Was that a fish you caught yesterday?
No, it was. Well, if you look in the background, you can see all the leaves on the trees. So that wasn't right now. That was last year's catch. And actually, my buddy Rich took the picture. I was with him when we caught it.
Awesome.
But I just was trying to say, hey, you know, good luck tomorrow because it's a nice trout and everything.
I got you. Oh, it was a nice. I was going to congratulate you. That's nice why I was asking.
It was a big brown. Why I posted is because I caught it on spinner that I make. You know, I do a lot of spin fishing and I do a lot of bait fishing. I don't really fly fish too much. Hopefully maybe one day I'll get into it, but I just haven't had the time. But I make a really good bait for trout. It's called the skein bait, and it's a scented, whether I scent it in corn or shrimp or whatever else. It's a great bait, and no one really knows what it is. It's basically the inside of a salmon that I get it from up in Oregon. And then I let it dry out uniquely, let it dry out, and then I flip it over, let it dry out, and then I cut them into little pieces. And then I put them in, you know, little plastic containers, and I scent them, and they're just trout killers. It's scented skein is what it's called. So between that and the trout spinners, you know, I got a nice little business going during trout season with that. And that's doing pretty good. And I'm happy with that end of it.
That's great, man.
That's what I'm keeping myself with occupied until turkey season.
All right.
I make my own turkey calls. I don't buy somebody else's.
Really?
Myself. I don't do any woodworking that I have done privately, mm-hmm. but the mouth calls I make myself.
I might have to have you send me one because yeah. I just got into turkey hunting. This is going to be my first year turkey hunting. I went to the store and got a couple calls, and honestly, everyone was telling me how hard a mouth call was to use, and it takes time to get used to it. And like, don't get me wrong, I'm not a professional. I'm not tooting my own horn or anything, but I've been able to match the sounds pretty well. And I think at this point, I just need to figure out when to use what and how to put them together for them to be, you know, effective and stuff. But
listen, when it comes to turkey hunting, my family didn't really hunt turkeys. So that's something I had to teach myself. I bought property up in Gilbertsville, New York, in Otsego mm-hmm. County years ago. And I started turkey hunting up there. And that's when I started calling. I tried the box call. I didn't like it. I tried the pot and peg. I wasn't crazy about it. Then I was introduced into the mouth call. And ever since then, that's all I do. I like to run and gun. So the mouth call is perfect. You bite on it and run and go and sit down and call.
Yep.
You know, I really got crazy with it. So I taught myself basically through a little bit of YouTube and some other friends that were willing to give me a hand into how to make diaphragm calls. And sure. I got really good at it. I have 6 different kinds I have on the market now. I actually make 8. I probably will do something with them next year. We'll introduce them as a new product for next year for the other 2 calls.
That's awesome.
But the 6 that I make are really universal. They're for, you know, beginners all the way to expert. You can really mm-hmm. get by with any of them. I have a couple that are really in the middle where guys maybe just getting into calling but liking it a lot and want to get a little bit more advanced. And I have something for everyone. I even just started making kids' calls with their small diaphragms. So a kid can use it, or maybe a woman, you know, she has a small
guy with a small mouth.
Whatever it is. Yeah. Whatever it is. You know, that's anyone. Awesome. You know, anyone that wanted. But mostly it a lot of kids use them, you know, kids, because they're small. Right. But and they're cutters, so they really work well, and it's easy for the kids to use, or a beginner to use, because the reeds are really, you know, easy to work with.
All right.
At the stage of the game. But that's something that I'm really looking forward to, and I can't wait to turkey.
I can't wait, man. I've actually been out deer scouting a lot over these last couple weeks. Mm-hmm. The winter was pretty rough out here. We had a few different ice storms. I mean, I'm sure you got hit with the same things.
Oh, I got hammered.
You know, my wife and I don't know if you remember, we just moved up to PA, like northeastern PA, like up in the Scranton area.
Right.
We got hit with 2 different ice storms. The snow was awful. And honestly, there's rocks everywhere up here. And someone who's listening to this is going to call me a bitch, but it's okay. Walking out in the woods with all the rocks under the snow, not knowing where things are, not being familiar with the area, just wasn't something I was super crazy about doing. Mm-hmm. So as soon as all the snow cleared off, I've really been trying to make up time in the woods. And it was really cool because I said this year my goal was to try to hear a turkey gobble in the woods. I don't want to set my goals too high and then find, you know, feel like I wasn't successful. And just this other day I was out, last week I was out and I brought my turkey call out in the woods just to get a feel for it. I wasn't planning on turkey hunting this area, so I said, screw it, I'll bring the call. So I was like messing around with the call as I was following some old rub sign, and I made a big circle around. And as I come out of the forest into the clear cut, I see 2 turkey going into the forest, going straight for where I had just called. So that to me sounds like, hey, maybe I'm starting to figure some stuff out. And then 2 days ago, I was back in the same like patch of woods, but in a different area. And I heard a tom gobbling from where I was scouting that other day. So I think I found where I want to go early season and try to figure that out. I'm really excited for that.
For me, it's like they're consistently in the same spot every year. Mm-hmm. You just got to figure out which way they're going and why sure. they're going there, point A to B. There's a couple of properties that we call them off of a lot, and they come over to us, and you were able to take some really nice birds over the last few years. I have a lot of fun with it, you know, but it definitely gets us prepared for deer season. Between, you know, the whole tough season getting through with me with the scents and lures and stores and on and on with all that kind of stuff. Once the season ends, I get a nice breather. And then mm-hmm. I kind of get ready with mineral season, as mineral season is now definitely upon us. They're already starting to break through.
Yeah.
You know, all kinds of different licks and salt licks. We're doing drip bags. I'm doing all kinds of stuff. So I'm always making something. I'm always keeping myself going. And, you know, it turns into trout spinners and trout bait. And I'm doing that at the same time. I'm doing minerals. And then I'm trying to cut calls. So I'm just trying to do so much. And I'm having fun with it. You know, I'm really having fun with it.
Yep.
Yeah, it's become a business and a way of life. But it's at the same time, I'm enjoying it a lot.
Hey, you know the old saying, man. If you enjoy what you do, you never work a day in your life.
Yeah. But, well, you know? Like the fire department, I miss it. I got a nephew on the job, so I'm able to keep in contact with him about, you know, the job itself. But mm-hmm. being a fireman, I do miss being a fireman. But now since it's end, it's given me so much more time to work on the business, be around my kids a little bit more and spend time with them on the field and all that kind of stuff. So it's been really good. It's been really good.
You know, the American dream used to be a white picket fence with three kids on, you know, 3 acres of land. I think at this point, the American dream has gotten so simplified where it's just as simple as this. I want to make my own hours and I just want to enjoy the time with my family. Yeah. I think, you know, maybe I'm wrong, but to me, that would be so perfect. You know, my daughter's got a game today. Well, I just won't go work today. No problem. You know what I mean? Like,
listen, I remember my father. He would make $500 a week. He was able to take care of two kids and a wife in the 70s doing that and have a new Cadillac every year. Those days are behind us. Like, we can't.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're gone. And that was like a simplified life. You know, you wake up, you go to work, you take care of your kids, you go home. You mm-hmm. eat, you go back to work. Or sometimes you work Saturday, sometimes you don't. So there would always be once in a while where he was or he wasn't at my baseball game, say. You know, so that's part of it. But now life has become more of a rat race. But I try to keep it simple and at my own speed. Yeah. Even though the world is spinning this way, I'm kind of going against the grain.
I'm right there with you, man. I was just listening to something recently, and it was about turkey hunting, where someone said, it was someone who makes turkey calls, and he basically said, I can play 5 real turkey for a bunch of people and ask them to vote for which one sounds the best. And 85% will pick the same turkey simply because that's what they want it to sound like. Right. But the best sounding turkey is a turkey that sounds like a turkey. And if all 5 of those turkey are real turkey, then what's, you know what I mean? I feel like that in my life also. Just because it's the norm, why is that what everybody has to do? And why is it the norm? You know what I mean? If I want to sit on my ass on the weekend and not do anything, what is that to you? You know what I mean? So it's like, I don't know, man. I feel like these days.
Well, social media has changed life.
Yes. And so have politics. I feel like.
And we don't
have to get into the politic conversation, but I just feel like every single thing going on these days pits us against each other. And I say that because us in the hunting universe, right? We are a minority in the grand scheme of things.
Hunters
are a minority, and we spend so much time arguing with each other. Screw you, you hunt with a crossbow. Screw you, I was here first. How dare you do this? Oh my God, you're hunting over bait. And it's like at some point, like, okay, I understand some of the arguments, but at some point you got to let up and be like, that's not my tag. That's not my time. So go ahead and enjoy yourself.
Those are independent thoughts, and guys have a right to think however they want to. Me, in my business, I can't think like that. I don't care if a guy says, hey, I used your product and I killed it with a Toyota.
If you're anything like me, you love to customize your bow while always making sure everything is just spot on. That's why I trust Anthony and Chris over at Big D Custom Pro Shop. They're located on Route 15 in Lake Apacon, New Jersey, and they have everything you need to tune your bow. And I promise you, you're going to leave there with a smile on your face. So if you live in northern New Jersey, give my boy Big D a shout for all your archery needs. When I head out to the woods, I have to know that I have the best performing equipment that I can afford. So that way I'm the only variable that I have to worry about. That's why I trust FireKnock products for all my arrow and bow accessory needs. From arrow components to bow accessories like stabilizers and arrow rests, they have what you need. Dorge won't put anything on the market if it doesn't perform 50% better than what's already out there. So head on over to FireKnock.com today to see what they're all about.
I don't care. You use my product. That's my goal, to get you to try my product.
And I killed it with a Toyota.
And to get you to be successful. I don't care if you hunt with a shotgun or you're David throwing a stone at Goliath. I don't care. I'm trying to get people to use products that I make that are honest products that are made by me. Not something that's bought and repackaged and said, put my name on it and go, here you go. I'll make a couple of bucks. And that's not what I do.
And made right here in America.
Yep. And I try to keep as much of the labels or the bags that I buy and things like that in America. But it's hard to buy U.S. products if they're not being made here, which is a tough deal for me because now who knows where this whole, the tariff and all that stuff is going to go. It's going to go somewhere, but it's definitely going to fall on the small business owner at some extent. Hopefully our guy will get us out of it and we should be good hopefully over the next few years, but we'll see where it all goes again. I'm just focused on life and enjoying time with my kids, my wife, my little house, and, you know, hunting and fishing. And you turn off Facebook and everybody's posting stuff, politics, one way or the other. I just want to get away from it sometimes. So what is it? Most people don't have the out, like maybe me and you and a lot of people, a lot of your listeners have. We got hunting. We go in the woods. We don't care what's going on. We just want to take in everything that we're doing. Is that nice buck going to come in tonight? I got to make the shot. You know, where do I place my mock scrapes? Or, you know, that's what we're thinking about. And that keeps us kind of grounded. And at the same time, it keeps us away from the everyday nonsense. Because I noticed that when I was a kid. I grew up in the biggest city in New Jersey. There was times where I was hunting and fishing with my family and my friends were getting in trouble. And when I came back, oh, you're lucky you weren't here because they all got in trouble. It saved me quite more than one time. Saved me. I was an inner city kid, inner city friends, but I hunted and fished. So it made me unique. Maybe 1 to 2% of the kids in my area hunted and maybe 5% fished. So I was very fortunate to grow up in an area where I had all this, but at the same time, I had a family that hunted and fished, and it saved me in a lot of ways. It definitely saved me. And it's given me a future, and look what I'm doing now. You know, I've been
15
years doing this.
You hit your second wind. You know, and the truth is, I like to play it off. And for the most part, I feel like I'm ready to be a dad. But as we're creeping closer to the date, I find myself, I don't want to say nervous. I don't know that nervous is the right word. I find myself very anxious, very excited, and I don't do very well with waiting for things that I know are coming, if that makes sense.
I understand.
You know, and things are, you know, we're in week 38. Today makes 38 weeks. So we finally hit full term. And, you know, my wife is ready to deliver. Like, she's ready for the baby to be out. Like most, like all women are at this phase. You know what I mean? And things are a little tense, you know, and the outdoors for me is a way for me to reset. You know, I'm fortunate enough that where I work, I'm literally in the middle of the woods. So I get out of work and I drive a mile down the road and I could go scout. I can go walk. I can listen to turkey. If I wanted to bring my fishing rod, I can go fish. I can go fish one of the lakes nearby. Right. You know, so like, I'll tell my wife, you know, do you have anything you need me to do today? No. Okay. I'm going to go hit the woods for a couple hours after work. I'll be home in time to make dinner. You know, and it's just like that time away, especially now that, you know, her work is done and she's home for the long haul now. You know, we got to find that. Obviously, there's working together and trying to figure stuff out. But then there's also that, like, we each need our own space, you know. And the big thing that I'm nervous about, and I don't know about nervous. Again, I don't know if nervous is the right word. But for me, it's how am I going to balance being a hunter, having my own brand that I'm trying to build, and also having a newborn at home with a wife who's a stay-at-home mom and literally doesn't get time off.
Yep.
You know,
it's a juggling. It's you have to juggle. And we all had to do it. I got two sons and I'm juggling. Even now, one's 20 and one's 17. I'm still juggling. And they're you know, grown men, basically. So I'm still juggling.
Exactly.
And whether it be their sports or whatever. Once you have kids, life changes. And the way I've always looked at it is, I didn't have the greatest of fathers, but I've become a really good father without having that training of having a good father around. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's been important to be really close and spend a lot of time with both my sons and everything that they do.
Sometimes
it's more rewarding than I could have ever imagined.
Yeah. And sometimes we figure out the right thing to do through having someone show us the wrong thing to do.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And I got to take a second to give a quick shout out. To be honest with you, I don't know if my wife really ever listens to these episodes or not, but if you are listening, you have been absolutely fantastic through this entire thing. Like, she has been a rock star, seriously. You know, she's been even keeled. Emotions are all, you know, hormones are all over the place, but she's really done a really great job of keeping her emotions.
Yeah, could have.
I don't want to say in check because that just sounds like a wrong way to put it. But, you know, she's just been like all the horror stories you hear about pregnancy. I feel like we haven't experienced, and that's a complete testament to her. So, if you're listening to this, thank you so much for being great.
And
I love you.
My wife is my rock. Like, I don't know how to do half the stuff without her. I just having her it definitely helps me a lot. She's a great woman. So I'm right there with you. And the hardest thing about it is they got to get some time. And she was a working mom, you know. It was a lot of juggling, and it's a lot of juggling around what you love to do. There's just some times where you just can't, and you just got to bite the bullet. You know, things get easier as they get bigger, but then as they get bigger, they get more involved in school, sports, things of that nature. And you still don't have the time. And even now I'm like, okay, I've been retired 7 years, but I'm not really retired, you know, because I work rack getters 365 days a year. And I work on Sundays and I work all day on Sundays. So if somebody calls me, I'm going to respond. I'm going to talk to them. I'm, you know, and I'm going to, just like we're doing now, and I'm going to spend time. And It's part of my business, and I put everything I have into it, and I enjoy it. And I like I said, I like to talk to guys about different things like yourself and get more involved with it in that particular area, making things and all season long, and coming up with new things. And a lot of things that I make are based off things that I had seen when I was a kid, or improving on something that may have been out when I was a kid that isn't out no more. Mm-hmm. So a lot of the things I'm doing is definitely off things that were around 40, 45 years ago. I hate to put that number to it, but that's where I'm at. You know, I'm 54. So, but yeah, a lot of things are from, you know, late 70s, early 80s, and things that other people were doing and that were around at that time. Because we'd always, at that stage, you know, we didn't have social media. So everything was a magazine. You'd get Bowhunter magazine and, you know, all the different magazines that were out at the time. I think it was Peterson's Hunting. There was a ton of them I used to get.
Field and Stream, I'm assuming.
Yeah, Field and Stream was there. Outdoor Life, you know, all of them. But there was, then once it started to get bigger in the 80s, the magazines just piled up and how many were out there. And then social media, you know, killed that cat, you know, because now all the information is at your fingertips.
Which is really unfortunate because sometimes, like, yeah, like hearing a story from someone's mouth is awesome. But sometimes the beauty behind reading an article is you get to paint the picture of somebody else's story, you know, and everyone's perception of that is a little different. Now, one of the cool things, like my wife, we've talked about this all along the pregnancy and everything. And it's like, you know, maybe instead of going hunting Saturday and Sunday, I just go Saturday. And then you get to go out on Sunday. You know, we're trying to figure stuff out. Or, you know, we already have plans. Like the day, you know, my wife is comfortable with the baby being out in public, I'm taking her in the woods with me. You know what I mean? I'll put a little net over her head and make sure the bugs don't get to her. Mm-hmm. You know, and I got a chest harness for her and everything, even if it's a 20-minute walk on a trail.
Listen, I see a lot of guys doing it. A lot of families doing it, whether they're hiking with their kids and all that. You'll be able to do that. And then once they do get older, the relationship that you build with them by taking them out into this becomes, you know, you don't need the phone. You're just sitting there talking to your child and becoming closer with your child, whether it's a girl or a boy. We know now, as you know, growing up, there was no women that hunted. Now you open up social media and there's 15% of us are women, which is everywhere. Great to see. It's great to see. It's great to see. So now guys like yourself who have a daughter coming, you'll be, you know now, well, hopefully she'll grasp onto what I'm doing, but I definitely could get her out there and enjoy time out in the woods with my daughter. So it's a good thing. And there's a lot of guys I know that are young that are just having kids now that are looking forward to getting into that.
Yeah. And my thing is, like, I understand, you know, having the enjoyment in hunting is more than just wanting to go out and hunt, right? It's about having a connection with the woods and really appreciating the animals and you know, what the creator has put here for us, right? And I always said, and I've had this conversation so many times, I don't care if my daughter never wants to hunt a day in her life. All I care about is that I help her foster an appreciation for nature and the things that were put here for us to live alongside.
Right, the respect for it all, right.
Exactly. And if she has that, I don't care what she wants to do, you know, because if she does that, then she's not going to be someone who litters and she's not going to walk around, you know, she's not going to be one of these people who swerves to hit an animal. You know, like, it's just like the little things. And I don't know. I don't want to get into the politics, which I was just about to get there, but we won't do that.
Right. Right. But it is what it is. And I get it. But it's definitely for us as hunters as a whole, whether it be from Jersey to California hunters, their release is getting out in the field. And most people don't understand it except for us. And if once you get indoctrinated into it, it's no stopping it, especially bow hunting, because that's just the focus of everything. Bow hunting is the center I consider now. And then everything is kind of branched off, where years ago growing up, everything was based off gun seasons. You know, it wasn't so much biggest bow in the late 70s into the 80s, and then it gradually the 80s just kind of took off. They kind of took off.
Now, do your kids hunt?
My older son fishes.
Okay.
He does not hunt, but he's going to hunt when he gets out of college. He's already said it a bunch of times, but he's so busy with that, he just doesn't have the time. Football season is smack dab in hunting season. He doesn't have time. And he's on a really good football team, so they go far every year, so he doesn't have the time yet.
Right.
My younger son hunted 12, 13, 14, 15, and now stopped because he's so busy, whether it's working, playing lacrosse, lifting, you know, football season again is smack dab in the middle of hunting season. Friday night games, he's beat up on Saturday mornings, he's not getting up. So once in a while, he'll step in the back here where I got some acreage in the back of my house and I'll get a little time in. Short story with him was 4 or 5 years ago. They had a short practice. He got out early from practice. He got a ride home. I leave for Flemington to go get in the tree. He calls me up. Hey, Dad, I'm going to get in the tree in the back. I said, okay, great. You know, there's a decent 8-pointer running around. I climb up my tree. I'm in the tree. I just get all settled. I get a phone call. Hey, I killed the 8-pointer. I literally had to get down, get in my truck, leave my hunting spot, and go help him with it.
And you didn't care about doing it one bit.
Could have cared less. He put a perfect heart shot on that sucker. It ran 50 yards, fell over. I gutted it, and we brought it to the butcher shop.
That's awesome.
So it was any beautiful 8-pointers. Up until that, he stopped for a little bit now, but you know he's busy. Hopefully they'll come back to it. I know my older son will. And they both trout fish, and they're looking forward to doing some striper fishing with us on the boats this year. So that should be a lot of fun with them.
That's fantastic. Now, is there anything else you want to touch on before we start to get into a little bit? Because let's be honest, the whole scent game podcast conversation, I mean, that's been done to nausea.
It's repetitive.
Yeah, but what I think is awesome is you have some products or different plays on products that I really haven't seen before. So instead of talking about, like, you have the normal scents, you have your scrape stuff, you have your rub stuff, you have your scent cover, you have your minerals, you have your attractants, you have all that like any other scent company does. But what I want to try to focus on here today, if we can, is some of the things that you have come up with that are different than the mainstream scent companies out there.
Right. And you know, everybody uses a rope now. So that's pretty cool. I was using vines or things that were in the area, obviously overhanging limbs and stuff like that, just to put my preorbital scents on, whether it be the oil-based version or the paste version or the spray version. You know, I had three different versions of preorbital scents that are, you know, they really work really, really well. The ropes came into effect, and I kind of held off from doing it because I don't like to always jump on everybody's idea. Mm-hmm. And then the idea turned into some vines, and all these bigger companies came out with all different kinds of stuff. And I just said, well, I like to be unique. I've always been that type of person. So I'm going to make some form of something that's going to be different from the original ropes. But I'm also going to open my ears and listen to guys and what their complaints have been about other ropes. So some of those ropes have a wire in it. Well, they're worried about poking the deer's eye out or hurting a deer. I got away from that because that was a thought. Some just use a flimsy rope. Well, deer like resistance. Bucks like to have some type of resistance. That's why they use those overlicking branches, because they have resistance. They're connected to something, and they're, you know, you're not going to break them all, and they whack them and get it all over. But I needed something with resistance. And, you know, you just think, and then you're like, okay, what could I do? Well, my wife brought home something from one of these Best Buys or whatever it was, little stores. And I looked at it and I said, wow, if I could make that bigger, that would be a great rope. And then I came out with the idea to put a clasp on it, that it's going to hold into the tree a lot better. A lot of the guys that we're talking were like, oh, I get a windy day or a storm comes in and I come in to hunt. The rope is stuck in the tree. I got to use my hands to get it out. Maybe you could weight something down. I was like, okay, good idea. So I came up with a, you know, ball system. I found a company that makes them in Toms River, New Jersey. I called them up. They sent me out some samples. I said, oh, this will look good. I got the size of the rope that would fit through, you know, the balls. I put a knot on the end of it. I frayed the bottom. And then I'm like, well, how can I make this better? Well, instead of just having the regular rope and tying something or anything like that, I came out with a clasp. We're like a heat shrink. So you can heat shrink it to the rope and then clip it right to the tree, and it'll never come down. With the weight at the bottom created resistance that I didn't really know. I put the weights at the bottom to help it stay down, but I didn't realize it was going to create resistance for bucks. But it did. So now bucks go up to it and they just push at the two balls. They get their scent all over it. And then obviously you're putting your preorbital on the frayed bottom and the knot that's above it. So it's a whole system that I came up with that. In the beginning, I had to try it out. And then I tried it out, you know, and it's just original forms. And it was working well. I'm just myself. So I figured, let me try getting into the rope business. And then from that point on, it was very unique. I don't know how many I've sold of them. But being that it was so unique, people look at it and they don't know what to make of it, but they understand what it is.
Yeah.
So they buy them and they work. And they've worked really well for now 2 years. Next year, this year coming, it'll be 3 years I'm making them. So then, you know, looking at that, I always wanted to make scent wicks for myself. It was something that I wanted to make. I've looked at other companies' scent wicks. I've seen they're always manufactured by someone else. Well, I have a manufacturer's license, so I decided, hey, I'm going to take a stab at this, but where should I go? Looking at all these different ones, there's literally, I don't know how many on the market. I want to be, again, unique. Well, I took the clasp and idea from my ropes. And then I found, you know, a couple of other components that would work with making my own scent wicks. And now I made them to where they're interchangeables. The you know, once the scent wick gets frayed and it gets old, you could take it out and screw into one end. and you get a chance to keep those, you know, the clasps and everything right there. So a guy, when he buys them, he always keeps the clasps and he always could interchange them. And I got extra ones, you know, on for sale on the website and stuff. So again, that's another thing that branched off the ropes. So
I got two questions for you when it comes to the ropes here. First off, you said that you had to find the right size to fit through the balls that you were given. Now, the industry standard, I guess you can say, is like a 1-inch diameter hemp rope. That's what a lot of people are typically using. I think yours is what, like a 1/2-inch rope?
It's about 3/4.
Okay. Do you find, what have you found with that change? Have you found like, so the balls that you put on there are absolutely awesome. Like you said, it almost turns into something for the deer to play with, not just rub their scent glands on and stuff. Right. You know, so you have your frayed part, then a knot, then a ball or two, then another knot, and then your regular rope.
Right.
At the top, you have the shrink wrap and the clap.
Right.
So what have you noticed when it comes to the difference in diameter?
There is no difference. Because really, I mean, if you think about it, when you look at licking branches are super thin.
Yeah.
They're not an inch. They're not even a 1/2 inch. They're not a 1/4 inch, some of them. They're even less than that. It's just that what it does is that there's a lot of them together. So it creates resistance. Yeah.
So do you think the 1-inch, they use the 1-inch ropes because they're heavier to get that resistance?
No doubt. They try to. And in some way, listen, they all work. And listen, at the end of the day, I could stick anything out there and put scent on it and make them smell it. Mm-hmm. So at least they're going to come up to it and sniff it.
But will they keep coming back?
Right. It worked. It worked. Mm-hmm. If they come up to it and smell it, it worked. Whether it's a big buck, a small buck, whatever it is, it worked. So no matter what, guys are going to get success off the ropes.
Right.
What I like to tell guys to do is, yeah, the rope works great by itself. But why not put it in a spot that already has overhanging licking branches already and add this into it to hold scent better than maybe the overhanging branches will.
So add it to something they're already using versus trying to create your own.
Exactly. That's like the idea. Now, if you have an open field and you want to put this out there on one little tree, it'll work. But when you're in the woods and you have all these options, use everything that you have. Don't just use the rope in one spot and then put everything together like that. Like have the licking branches in that, because you could put a lot more scent and hold a lot more scent on the ropes. They're going to last a little bit longer than it lasts on the tree limbs and stuff like that. That overhanging licking branches.
Now, something I've run into in the past, and what I've heard actually talked about a lot on different forums, internet, yada yada, or when people buy like hemp rope to make rope scrapes out of, there's a very, very strong chemical smell. Last year, before you and I linked up, actually, I think I bought like 100 foot of inch hemp rope, and I've literally had them hanging out in the woods for a year, trying to air them out. And I think finally they don't smell. Is that something that, you know, customers have to worry about when it comes to your ropes? Are they already descented?
Well, the unique thing about what you're saying, I'm glad you brought that up, is it depends on where you buy them. And it depends who you buy them from. And when I say where you buy them, you're buying them from Taiwan or here or there or Singapore, wherever they come from. Some of them spray stuff down because they're trying to get it to last long and not get weathered. Mm-hmm. So they spray it down with some kind of chemical. And the first ones that I ordered, I opened the box and I was like, well, that's not going to work. That was like tape up the box and send them back. And then after a couple of times, I found out where to get them that did not, they just had the rope smell. So I definitely would not recommend from a guy like me, like I'm not going to buy them because I just feel that once it's on it, it's like a gear oil for your car. Once you get that on a shirt, that's going to smell like that for years.
Yeah.
Or you're just going to wind up throwing it out, smelling like that. You'll never get that scent off. Never.
So yours are ready to use right out of the bag.
Yeah, I got them. There's no scent on them.
I love that.
Just the rope scent. You know, that regular rope scent. And there's a bunch of different ones. A lot of guys, you know, talk about the hemp ones. I think that's probably a really good idea. But there's quite a few that you can get out there that are of the same, you know, like hemp, but not this, you know, they don't have to be hemp. You can get different ones. They're different ones that are made that definitely aren't sprayed down. So I did my homework with those a little bit. Like I said, I'm always working like 2 years before, like with stuff. Mm-hmm. And then I have to use it myself. And then if it's working for me, that's when I start to make it a product. Then I know that it's a product. And then I'll do a little bit more testing by give it out. I got a friend in Tennessee. I got a friend here. I got a friend there. And they're trying it out. And then I get the okays from them. And they're like, nah, this stuff works. Like, definitely make it a product.
That's awesome.
That's when I'll go. So it's like almost a 2-year process. For every product that I'm coming out with now, it was probably 2 years ago that I worked on them, or a year before that I worked
on them. So everything has been tested, proven to function?
Yeah, like I said, most of the time it's done by me from in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
kind of PA, Jersey, New York deer, kind of all the same. Not as much New York, but still the same. But when you're in my business, you have to have it tested elsewhere.
So 100%.
So I've always like worked out a good deal with a lot of the guys that work with me, or I sponsor in a sense, or if you want to call it that. I just call it a friendship, because that's really what it becomes with most of the guys that work with me. I just send them stuff and they're testing it, and they're going to send me pictures and say, hey, listen, that did not work. That is not a product that I would recommend. Or no, that was something that you really got to. Yeah, that was something. And then a lot of times it's visual. You know, like if something looks unique, it's unique because of the way it looks.
Yeah.
But it's all got to work. It could look as unique as it wants to be, but it's got to work. And right. Once I started sending those ropes out and I seen what they were doing, I was like, wow, this is definitely, yeah, this is something that I have to make. And like I said, I've sold a ton of them. I've done some shows and some shows at stores, and I've sold a ton of them there. And I got a lot of feedback from guys. You know, 8 of 10 guys have success with them. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's not the product. Sometimes it's the hunter not understanding where to place it, mm-hmm. or how to use it specifically, or put maybe the wrong thing on it at certain times. Maybe putting like the mock scrape lure on it when I have a preorbital for it, you know, that's kind of, you know, defeats the purpose. But at the same time, it's been mostly successful. There's a lot of other companies that have been successful with them. So it's something that works. And again, hunters are gadget guys. We love gadgets. We love it. We spend money on gadgets. When I was a kid, 14, 15, 16, all the way up into my 20s, 30s, gadgets were the thing. Anything new coming out, everybody wanted to try it. See what it was about. Did it work for me? Did it help me? On and on. So for me, the more things that you have, the more interest people are interested in. And it's definitely something that works. But you got to put the time in to test stuff.
Of course.
Because some people just don't, to throw it on the market and sell it. And eh, it works. It don't work. Whatever.
Yeah.
I'm now just for a buck.
Yeah. No, 100%. Now you and I, when we linked up, same difference. I reached out and I said, you know, I'm local. You're local. Would you like to work together? You said 100%. Let's meet. When I got to your house, you had a box of stuff waiting for me. And you're like, just take it. Test it out. Let me know what you think. Yep. Right. So I went out last year and I made a couple mock scrapes. But it was like the timing wasn't right on my end. What I mean by that is I put them out like maybe 2 weeks before the season started, where realistically I prefer to start stuff now. And that's going to come back at the end of the story and it'll all make sense. So last year, last summer, we had our number one target buck on camera, the most patterned deer I've ever had in my entire life. My listeners have heard this story many, many times already. But I went out, the season I think opened on Wednesday for New York last year. I went out on Friday, sat the field. I didn't see him. My dad sat the same field on Saturday and missed him. And with that miss, that deer disappeared.
Yeah, that's
but true. A lot of our other deer disappeared too. So my theory is deer, you know, they have their interdigital gland and, you know, they secrete their emotion through that, right? So my thing was, if this is a mature big deer in the area and he's scared now, then, you know, all the other deer are scared too. I say all this because when I put out the rat getter stuff last year, I had a lot of traffic on it very quickly. And then after that miss, things kind of started to dry up a little bit. And I was, like I said, it was bad timing. But then now, once the deer have come back, right? It's not like we had a lot of deer on our property. They just weren't going to my mock, whatever. The deer disappeared last year. So now the deer are starting to come back in as the forest is starting to leaf out a little bit. You know, we're in upstate New York as well, where our property is. So things are a little bit behind everywhere else. And all of a sudden, that rope scrape that I put out last year with all the rat getter stuff is literally being hit anytime a deer goes into that field. Now they're hitting it on their way into the field. They're eating in the field, and then they're checking it again when they leave the field. Some of the deer are playing with it. Some of them just kind of walk by it, nudge it, and smell it, and walk by. But every single day now, I'm getting that pure natural scent on that rope scrape.
What's what you said spawned something for me to tell you?
Sure.
You shoot at a deer, and the thing is, hunting in the 90s, when things changed to being able to shoot so many does and so many deer, and us as hunters in New Jersey, I used to shoot 10, 12, 15 deer a year. So if you get that many shots at deer and you shoot that much and you kill that many deer, you get a lot of experience on what goes on with deer in areas. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what it brought me, because I was hunting all those years in the 80s, 90s, into the 2000s. Once the 90s came and the amount of deer you could take. So now you learn a lot. So I get a doe to come in and I'm like, oh, this is a nice doe. I'm going to take her. I whack her. I shoot her. She runs off. She dies maybe 60, 70, 80, 100 yards away. Great. Other deer would come in and mm-hmm. they would immediately get spooked from that spot. Because what happens is when you shoot a deer or you miss a deer or you're scared the shit out of them, whatever you want to say, that deer lets off metatarsal gland. That's that little black on the back end that you see, that little black on the back end right there. Yep. They release that. So now when other deer come into that area, they smell that, they run. They get scared right away. They don't come back to that area. That is a warning to them. So when your father shot at that buck, he shot out metatarsal. If any deer came in that area within 48 hours of that shot and he let out metatarsal, they're not going to come in that area. And if they do, they're young. They're not smart enough to know. But no bigger deer is going to come in there for a while.
That's or they're coming at night.
Right. Or they'll come through at night. Well, that obviously that's where you get into the baiting thing too. Mm-hmm. You know, you're baiting, you leave scent there. There's only so many times that you're going to be able to bait without a bigger buck picking up on your scent.
Yeah. I mean, baiting is a science of its own. It
100% is.
You almost have to hunt. You almost have to bait like you're hunting.
It's 100% definitely. There's a time and place for it. You know, there's a time and place for it. And getting to that, the best time of the year is the first 10 days. Mm-hmm. I love hunting the rut and all that. Yeah, it's great. Grunt calls. It's cold. It's all that. My most enjoyment comes the first 10 days of bow hunting. That's when I have the best chance and opportunity to take a decent buck.
They're uneducated. Like
that since it's open there.
Yeah. And the deer are uneducated. I always said the rut is great to in my opinion, I know a lot of people are going to disagree with me, but I feel like the rut is a great time to get lucky. But early season is a great time to capitalize on all the work you've put in since the end of the last season. Like my big thing is deer work on patterns and time frames, right? You know, the summer comes, they're growing, they're putting on antler size, they're putting on whatever. And they stay in those summer patterns until something tells them, okay, now it's time to start transitioning into the rut pattern.
Right.
Now, what is that? Scientists are going to tell you that it is the amount of daylight in a day that triggers a deer's, you know, natural system, which honestly, I'm not going to argue with them. They're scientists.
And we know that from deer farmers.
Yes. My other side, though, I feel that deer know that when those leaves start to fall off the trees and the season starts to change, I feel like since deer have been hunted at the level they've been hunted for the last 50 years, give or take, like I don't want to say evolved because there hasn't been enough time to go by to have a true evolvement. But I think that the deer that are alive pass on these concepts and they know what's going on. So they know that if they don't find a way to be safe as the leaves start falling off, they're not going to be around anymore.
It's interaction. Actually, the more interaction with humans, the smarter that they get. Mm-hmm. And getting back to the bait site, like if guys have been baiting, like we've gotten now so far, so many years into baiting that guys have grown up where baiting is normal. From they grow up a baby, they start hunting at, you know, 9, 10, 12 years old. They've been baiting. Everybody's been baiting for years. Yeah. Well, the deer have now adapted to that. They've adapted to bait sites. So like you may get deer responding coming in the first 10 days, and then they start to leave those bait sites because they go on different patterns and they're being chased out by different bucks because they're sparring and who's more dominant and everything else. But what's gone on in the later season is bait sites have been turned into a mock scrape. Because what does a bait site attract? Does, no matter what, they're going to come out. You're leaving all that scent in one spot. So you may have a buck that's roaming through an area, pick up on the scent of the bait site, and he's just scent checking the bait site, which is no more than what? A very large mock scrape.
Yeah.
Because all those does have been congregating there all season long, and now they're coming in there because of what? They're coming in the rut. They're starting to change. The scent's there. Does, fawns, big does, adult does, small bucks, all this scent is now brought into this baiting area. So what does it become? It becomes a mock scrape. Because what is a mock scrape? Where scent is left by adult and small animals all the way through, constantly. So a lot of guys, basically, if you're hunting, you know, you have to be understanding of that also. Like, you don't need, like, I've had guys put out scent wicks of product and go, I'm bait hunting, but I got the stuff right there. They're really not smelling it. No, they smell it. Mm. But you're hunting one big, giant mock scrape. They don't need you to tell them that there's deer there. They already know it. They come there to smell which one is hot, and then they're going to go. They're not going. They may not pay attention to mock scrapes as much around bait sites. They may not mess with ropes as much around bait sites because it's already scented. It's already, the whole area is scented. I mean, you could just, I mean, if you have deer in your area, they carry scent. So that's what's there. So you don't really need, like I try to tell guys, if you're going to hunt around bait sites, don't put all your eggs in one basket and think it's the greatest thing ever. Sometimes it hurts it. You know, bait, 100%. Let's keep it to bait. But if maybe 75 yards, 100 yards down the, you know, your area, you may have a couple of good trails and you want to get over there. put out a couple of mock scrapes there, you're going to get more action there than you will by the bait site on scrapes.
To be honest with you, you're probably better off taking the downwind side of the food that you're putting down, the bait site, and put your mock scrape or your rope or whatever down there. You know, because one of the big things, like I grew up baiting in Jersey every weekend. You know, going out dropping corn, you drop it back in the day, there was Khmer deer. We used to use Khmer deer all the time, you know.
I met him, he was a great guy.
Yeah, which honestly was really great for bear. We found that out the hard way. But what I've learned as I get older is you don't want to sit on the bait. You want to use the bait to help you figure out where to hunt. You know, so don't hunt where the food is. Hunt where the deer are going to go to smell what's going on at the food.
You know, you have
to. Or the transition zones.
Right. Listen, I'm a big acorn guy. I'm a big acorn tree hunter. I'm huge at it. And I'll switch from white oaks to black oaks to red oaks later in the season.
Mm-hmm.
Even black oaks later in the season, if you have them, you know, in your area, they're a great way to hunt. I have a lot of success over those three, you know, ways that I hunt. I don't hunt over cornfields. I don't have soybean fields by me in a lot of the spots that I hunt. They're adjacent to the properties or, you know, a couple of properties over, but I don't have them specifically to hunt. So I'm big into the acorns. That's kind of something that I've been doing. And that's something that my grandfather did years ago. And I just mimicked it and got obviously better than the way that they hunted. They mostly hunted with the gun. They were, you know, when I started hunting, my grandfather was like in his early 70s. So they were, you know, they were done at that time. Just, it was just teaching me the ropes. And then I had two older cousins, one 4 years older than me, one 5 years older than me, my cousin Eddie and cousin Todd. And they would grasp onto the younger cousin and teach you the ropes. And then you would just go to yourself. You're out there yourself.
Figure it out.
Then the magazines would take over and you'd get into Peterson's bow hunting. You know, bow hunting life and all these different things. And you start reading and you start learning the ways of it. And before you know it, you're doing your own thing. And that's
of course
how bow hunting has progressed for me. And then obviously, you know, then they added the amount of deer you could kill. And then they added, well, now you could start baiting, you know, because they're trying to spawn a whole new people to hunt. Like they want people in their late years to hunt. They don't want you to have to work as hard. And let's face it, Jersey does it because they want the money, not because they
like
it.
Yeah,
we spoke about this. Conservation in Jersey, if it was up to us, we would have 3 points or better on one side. Like we talked about, you'd have 50, 60%, maybe 70% of the guys agree that that's where we should go. Okay, maybe the older guys and maybe the younger kids can shoot what they want. But us guys from, say, 18 to 65, we should be really conservation, worried about what we're shooting.
Exactly. You know, anyone you talk to, I'm pretty sure any state that has antler restrictions, there is, like, the kids are exempt from that. You know, if you're on a youth license, kids can shoot whatever they want. Yeah. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, I have no problem.
You know, but it's like, how do I put it? Everyone now is out, you know, the big wave today in the hunting industry is go out and hunt mature deer. Go out and hunt mature deer. And that's like the guys who are really into it and they want a challenge, and that's great. Don't get me wrong. But if everyone is out shooting the 2 and 3 year old deer, never mind having mature deer to hunt, at some point,
yeah, I know where
you're going to lose the older age class of deer. And the ones that are out there, you're never going to see.
Well, it's definitely a fine line because it's like you want guys to stay interested. So, yeah, that's why they opened up the thing with the does where you could shoot as many does. And they were overpopulated in a lot of areas. But my area, which once was overpopulated, is not overpopulated. Yeah. And we spoke about that because you're shooting so many does, the farmer permits and the coyotes, you're really having, it's not what it used to be, the population in the area that I hunt.
Well, if I remember correctly, I think this year is supposed to be the year for a big overhaul change of regulations. Before this past hunting season in Jersey, I remember they sent out the survey for everybody to fill out. You know, how do you feel about 3-on-1 side? How do you feel about this? How do you feel about that? You know, the state wants to combine regulations and have less zones and all that stuff, which I think is great. I mean, to have 70 something zones that the state is split into and to have to like, oh, well, which line am I on? Where am I hunting today? You know, like, it's a little ridiculous.
Well, it's because of permits and they want more permits. They want more money. That's why.
Yeah.
I mean, just think about it. Everything we buy, you got to get a fishing license. Oh, you got to get a trout stamp. Mm-hmm. How about just incorporated in it? So I don't have to get a stamp. It's just included in it. Charge me a few more bucks, whatever.
Exactly.
Like, come on. Like, it's just nonsense. It's just more work for the hunter. And you know what it does? It leaves an open door to make mistakes on certain things.
Mm-hmm.
Where a hunter may get in trouble for something that was so minute that
exactly.
He made a mistake on. It's all these different things that, like, just give us one freshwater license that includes everything, and I'll just pay it. Like, it's like the all-around license. Like, okay, just buy the all-around license, but no, you still got to get a permit for permit C. I mean,
come on. It's not really an all-around license. It's a semi. It's a semi.
Yeah, it's like, just incorporate everything. Most guys are going to just buy the whole damn thing anyway, one shot. And we could save on paperwork, time, and aggravation. It's like, who set up the system in New Jersey? I could fix it in one day.
Exactly. And my thing is, and I'm glad you brought up the money thing, is like, when I was a Jersey resident, which obviously now I'm not, it cost me more money to hunt in New Jersey as a New Jersey resident than it cost me to hunt both New York and Pennsylvania as an out-of-state resident.
I used to get a turkey tag in New York. $50, I could hunt the whole month. I'm paying $130-something dollars for 5 weeks.
Yeah. Yeah.
Makes sense.
It doesn't make sense. And I get it.
The other thing is, look, I love the state. And I love being able to hunt. And I love having to be able to have the opportunity to take a lot of deer. But if you're killing $6 and $5 a year, small buck, big buck, whatever, and every guy could do that, where's your population at? Where's your hierarchy? Where's your twos and threes and four? You don't have it. We need to start cutting that down. Listen, two with the bow, one with the gun, done. You know,
if that, four, look at PA in New York. You get one buck. You get one.
Exactly one. One with the bow, one with the gun, done. And listen, when I hunted in New York, there were some hammers out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there was, and you'd see the age class. You'd see the year and a half. You'd see the 2.5s. You could tell the difference. The 3.5s, the 4.5s. Here, you're going to get a couple threes, some twos, a few ones, and maybe a 4 and 5 will pop out once in a while. Or maybe one will travel so far that you'll get a look at one. Not everybody's going to have the opportunity. So again, you want to keep hunters interested so you have all these, you know, you're able to take all these deer, but it's not helping the population of whitetails. And it's not, and listen, we've got some great bucks in Jersey. There's guys take big bucks every year. Sometimes in your area, you just don't have an adult buck. Sometimes in your area, a 3-year-old may be all you have. And then hoping later on in the season when the rut comes, you get an opportunity at a deer that's traveling. So the rut definitely has its purpose. And I love the rut, hunting the rut. Mm-hmm. It's cold out, which I definitely enjoy. But for me, I love early season. And I'm a scent company. I don't make early season scrapes. I don't do it in June or July. I'm a week before the season guy, get it going, see what's out there, and then I'll put them out there. I'm going to say this, and I don't care who likes it or who don't. They put that in place, the bigger companies, because they wanted to sell more deer lure. Okay? Pushed people out there, hundreds of people that work for bigger companies, because they wanted you to spend money in June and July and August, because they know you'd go through a bottle or two. By the time the season started, you wanted another bottle. I don't tell people to do that. I tell people, start them a week before you're hunting. Have fun with it that way. You don't need to be penetrating their bedding areas in June and July and kicking them out by mistake because you want to see what's there. You want to watch them grow. Put out mineral. Put out a Tacticam. Stop by once a month. Hit it with mineral. Hit it with my salt lick igniter. Put one of my drip bags over it. Add some molasses. Add some type of feed, soybean. I always recommend roasted soybean over corn. Corn is not good for your animals, especially when it's cold out. Yeah. I see guys using corn all the time. Hey, it's good. I get it. It's like putting a bunch of Reese's on the table for it. That's all that is. It's starchy. It's not great for your bodies. It doesn't help them as much as you think it does. It just attracts them, and it does a really good job. But if you want to help your deer, roasted soybeans. That's the way to go. High protein, high fiber. It's great for their bodies, great for their rumen, great for their stomach. It's just a great product for them. And I sell them. And a lot of my products are made with them. My mineral is made with it. My igniter is made with it. My drip bags are made with it. It's in my feed. So I use it in everything. Roasted soybeans. It's a very, very great product for the animal. And when I see guys out there putting bags of corn in like February, I'm like, that's not helping your animal. I don't care what state you're in. I don't care where you live. It works great, but it's not great for them.
You actually just cut about 15, 20 minutes off this podcast because one of the questions I was going to ask you was, how do you recommend using these lures in the spring? But you just answered that.
I don't think that guys should be traveling into their. Listen, you got in Jersey, you're hunting from September to January and some guys even into February, which for me is just, I don't even know why you want to hunt in February for a deer. They're pregnant. You don't want to shoot any does. I don't want to shoot a buck that may have lost his antlers. So for me, there's no sense on, you know, being out there in February. It's a waste of time. Unless you're a meat hunter, then hey, God bless you. Do what you want to do. That's fine. But for me, there has to be a downtime for whitetails where they can relax, where they can remember, then, you know, you're out there trout fishing and turkey season. You may be turkey season in the same place you deer hunt.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't get as much downtime as they used to because the season extended so far. I think 2 weeks into January done, we start again. I think they should cut it off after the second week of January. It's too long of a season. You don't need to stress their bodies out in cold temperatures. It's terrible for deer. You know, they need to have a downtime. So now they get to a downtime. Well, why would I want to be there in June chasing a big buck out of a spot, or July chasing a big buck out of a spot? You don't need to have scents and lures out there. And mine is a glandular product. It's not just urine in a bottle. It's a glandular product. Obviously, we have synthetics in the state, so I have to mimic that. But out in Pennsylvania, New York, where I sell them, it's a glandular product. Some of the glands don't really have that going on right at that time of the year in June. Mm-hmm. It's not till September when they're going to start getting, you know, late August when they're starting to get rubbing their velvet off and starting to get more in depth with the rut coming and the cold coming, where the big change is coming, what I like to call it, the big change, which is like, you know, the last couple of weeks of August right up on through the, you know, right up into the rut. But the big change, what I like to call, is around August 16th. August 16th is a date that I put in when I first started making mineral. I was testing it. I found out that they hit mineral up until about the middle of August. And then they don't visit those sites anymore. Their bodies don't require any more salt licks. Their body, they may come by and mess with a little bit or stop by here and there. But for the most part, they know the winter's coming. They know the rut is coming. And they want to put on weight, acorns. Looking mm-hmm. for high vegetation, high fiber, high fat, and looking for acorns. We get those windstorms or late summer rainstorms that come out, and you go by to the areas where you may have acorns, and you look on the ground, and you'll find some of them, and then you know. Because then you'll see the caps, and you'll start to see that the few are gone. So I like to check those spots periodically towards the end of August, especially after a rainfall, because they'll drop some acorns out of the trees or some that have still been growing. You look, you see them, and then you could put up a camera, and sure enough, they'll come and they'll start eating them. And that's mm-hmm. how you know that's what they're on. But I use August 16th as a base where they're done with mineral. And I get guys that'll order it online, and I call them. And I tell them, listen, this is not the best product to use this time of the year. You want to use something, use my feed. I could direct you in a bunch of different ways to use different things. But don't buy any more mineral as of August 16th. If you want to supplement it by adding it into feed during the season, that works great. It's good for them. But it's nothing that they're going to need until we get to, you know, January, February.
And I love that. Like a lot of the different companies that we are starting to partner with or whatever, however you want to call it, are very much the same mentality that you are. You know, we were talking off the air just before this about mm-hmm. Fire Knock and how, you know, I'm about to start building arrows. I'm looking forward to releasing. I think by the time this podcast airs, I will have officially launched my arrow series.
Yeah, but that.
What's that? And I'll be a dad, 100%. Yeah. You know, but it's the same thing. George is the same way. You know, if you order something and he feels it's not the best thing for you, he's going to call you up and tell you not to get it.
Yeah.
You know, or, you know, if you call him and you say, listen, you know, I'm a younger hunter. I shoot a 50 pound bow with this let off. And, you know, I'm only shooting under 30 yards. He's going to say, you don't need my arrow. You know, if you want to use my shaft, fine. But you don't have to spend the money on all the upper end stuff because you don't hit the speeds you need to. You know, guys, people, companies or business owners that will tell you not to buy their stuff because it's not the best for you, those are the guys that we here at Wing and Tail Outdoors, you guys are the guys that we want to build relationships with. Yeah. Because it's not about selling a product. It's about helping people enjoy the outdoors and maybe helping them be a little bit more successful.
And again, I've noticed that the bigger companies were pushing that because I started getting sales for these products. And I was mm-hmm. like, why are guys ordering this now? And this was a few years ago when it really started to kick off about doing it. And I understand, listen, guys in Iowa may have a different deer population than we have in New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have a different type of animal that's there. Exactly. We don't encounter humans as much as they do in New Jersey. It's a different animal. You don't need to be doing that, at least in this state, or even PA in my eyes. Will you get pictures over it? Yeah, they're going to. If you're putting it by their bedding area, they're going to come and check it out. They live there. Mm-hmm. You know? You know, it's
Another company that I need to throw out there, I forgot, is Vitalize Seed, is one of the more recent companies that we've started to work with. Al and Jared, Jared runs the Habitat podcast, and Al is just co-owner of Vitalize Seed. And they do great stuff. Same thing. You know, I was talking to him on a podcast 2 weeks ago, I think now. And I was like, I really want to try this product out and I want to use it this way. And he's like, you know, if you want to use it, by all means, I'm not going to stop you from buying it. But I'm telling you, it's not going to work and you should get this instead, which was the cheaper product, the lesser product, but the one that was right for me. Right. You know, so like that to me is huge. And the other side of that is, like you're saying, you have to put out and hunt you have to put out stuff to hunt the deer in your area. Because a deer in North Jersey is not going to behave the same way as a deer in South Jersey.
That's a fact. And
it's just the way it is. Me personally, I love to hunt around communities, houses, cul-de-sacs. I love hunting in areas like that.
Right.
Why? They're used to people.
But let's face it, Jersey's getting more built up. Sooner or later, we're not going to have many more other areas other than that to hunt anyway.
Exactly.
Going in the direction.
And the worst part is Jersey does have a lot of massive tracts of land. Let's not get it twisted.
Oh, no,
there are plenty of places in Jersey that are 10,000 acres. Mm-hmm. The problem is, you can't access them. You know what I mean? Like, and don't get me wrong, I think it's great. I don't think, you know, people should be willy-nilly out on quads and stuff, but I do think if you were to allow guys to drive them a certain distance in and have the rest of it gated, or, you know, whatever, just make it a little bit easier for us to access the land that is there for us.
Like you have stations that have a lot of property, and there's a lot of areas that have a lot of property set aside. There's conservation groups all over, and mm-hmm. some of them, because they are conservationists, that they understand that deer population gets out of whack, it hurts your tree population and your growth.
Yes.
So I belong to a conservation group that allows me to hunt. Even though they're a liberal organization, and even though they're funded by the state and they have local funding or funding from liberal organizations, they understand that there has to be, deer have to be taken.
Yes.
So those are the groups that understand, but sometimes us as hunters hurt those because we tend to do different things that maybe aren't, whether it's, you know, trespassing on neighbors' properties or things like that, or killing something you weren't supposed to, or doing something out of the ordinary that maybe they don't allow. But mm-hmm. for the most part, a lot of these conservation companies and groups, they allow you to hunt now because they understand the value of taking deer. They understand that there is a value in it.
No, the thing is, like, I love the forest, but the problem is, like anything, you love your house, you take care of your house, right? Mm-hmm. If something's breaking, you fix it. Sometimes you have to break something in your house to repair something else, right? So what drives me crazy, and I never really started paying attention to this until we had our own property and I started doing land management stuff. The forests in Jersey are awful. The forests in New York are awful. You drive down the road. And you can see a country mile through the woods. No deer, they're forced to live there, but no deer wants to live in those areas. And then what happens? You start driving down the road, you're like, ooh, this looks like a nice thick patch. You get on Onyx or whatever GPS you're using, it's private land. You know, so it's like, I got to commend the private land owners who are doing the right thing. But let's face it, if we want our forests to survive the test of time, let me take that back. The forests are going to survive the test of time. And for us to think that we as human beings are going to change the earth, it's a little bizarre to me. So my thing is, we're not out here allowing the animals to do what they need to do. And we're not allowing Mother Nature to do what it needs to do. That we need to be in the woods with chainsaws. We need to be cutting trees down. We need to be harvesting trees. We need to be, again, managing the deer herd and the population. We can't be afraid of fire. We have to be running fire through the woods because everything in nature repairs itself.
Yep.
But if you're not damaging it to spark that repair, we're left with what we have.
Right. Right.
And what we have is not what it was 200 years ago.
Oh, no, it's not even close to that. I mean, and that's the fine line that we're in. We're in that with the farmers. You're in that with the state and their money hungriness, and then conservationists like ours, because we are conservationists. That's what we are, part of that. Maybe we're frowned upon by the liberals and all that because of, you know, we hunt and we kill and they think it's all, it's not always about that. It's not about that. But social media has helped the hunter and it's hurt the hunter because
you're 100%
over competitive and what you shoot and how you shoot it and this and that. That's hurt it.
Yeah.
But and learning other ways to hunt and spreading good information around is definitely something that it's also helped with.
Exactly.
Companies like myself have thrived in this because it's allowed people to integrate one another from Iowa to New Jersey with just pictures and video. And then you build relationship with guys and you talk to them about, you know, hey, I got this going on. What do you think I should do? Guys will, you know, always try to listen to other guys or maybe what their expertise is, you know, is in and go from there. I mean, it's a revolving door. And I think deer hunting is never, like, you can never know everything. You're always learning something new every year, especially if you change properties. Forget it. If you change property from a property you hunted for a long time to a new piece, it takes you 2 to 3 years to learn.
Just to learn
the property, figure out where all the acorns are, where they like to hang out. You could get a couple of good spots right away, and then you're going to learn more about the property, especially depending on the size of it. But it's a revolving door. You go in one, you think you know everything, you come out, and you're like, oh, shit, I don't know half the shit that I thought I knew.
Yeah.
And that's the good thing about hunting. I'm always learning something, even now that I've been hunting now 42 years. You know, I'm hunting since 83.
And that's the beautiful thing, man. It's like once, like, I don't know if you know this, but I'm a teacher. I'm a math teacher. I teach middle school math. And I tell my kids all the time, you never stop learning. And the day you stop learning is the day you stop living.
Yep.
Right? Because they at a young age, people think learning is education, right? Which is true. And education is part of learning. But learning is making mistakes. Learning is trying something. And if it works, you do it again. If it doesn't work, you figure out how to make it work the next time.
Yep.
You know, learning is asking the questions to help you figure out how to do stuff. And more importantly than asking the questions is accepting the response you get. Going into something and expecting a specific response and then, well, that's not what I wanted to hear, so it must be wrong. No, you have to have an open mind enough to say, okay, this isn't what I expected. Am I wrong? Let's test this out.
Yeah.
You know, like we go through our lives every single day working through the scientific process and we don't even recognize it. We learn the scientific process in what, fifth grade, come up with a hypothesis, gather data, test it out, analyze. And then was your hypothesis correct or not? No. Okay. What do you have to do to change it? Let's do it again.
Well,
you know,
you grew up like me where everything was a book or you had to speak to someone to talk about things to learn. Now it's at your fingertips.
Yep.
You know, like YouTube, learning how to turkey call on YouTube is a great way for you to learn how to turkey call.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you're using a diaphragm call because they're going to play a turkey sound and you're going to mimic it. And that's a way some guys, like I say, hey, listen, if you're not sure or you're learning and there's only so much information I could give you, go to YouTube, punch up turkey call, turkey call, diaphragm call, on and on. And you could get your clucks down, your putts down, just from watching. Just put the call in your mouth and let it roll, and you're good to go. Guys, I get guys to call me all the time. They're like, hey, I'm on the phone. You know, I'm calling you. Wanted to see how you're doing, but don't mind me. I'm driving to work. I'm turkey calling. I'm like, you know, I'm practicing turkey calling in between talking to you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, you know, guys find time to practice, but I definitely like to use what we have now. Like YouTube is a great way for guys to learn.
100%.
So I definitely refer a lot of guys that are new to turkey hunting, to using diaphragm calls, to, hey, I can teach you so much and talk to you so much, but go get a good visual and that'll really help you. So I picked out a couple of things that I always give to guys that I know are new callers. And I'm like, hey, go check this site out on YouTube. This will really help you. So there's a lot of stuff like that that's definitely been really good with, especially when it comes to turkey calls.
That's awesome.
Yeah, that's definitely something that helps a lot. And once you learn it, it's like, you know, you don't ever forget it. It's like, you know, riding the bike.
Exactly. Now, I got one more scent question for you. We're at about an hour and 10 minutes now. I would love to have you back. What I'm trying to do on this, which I just started recently, is I'm trying to find local hunters, New Jersey hunters. Basically, I'm not going to list all the states. Basically, spanning from Virginia to Maine, including Virginia, West Virginia, and Pennsylvania.
Right.
And I'm trying to do like hunter profiles, if you will, but like Northeastern profiles. So I'd love to get you back and just talk hunting stories. You know, your background, like we talked a little bit about your background in deer hunting, but how you like to go about deer hunting and how you like to go about turkey hunting. I think that'd be a fantastic
conversation. I touched on a little bit by you know, acorns and stuff.
Yeah.
Definitely, I'm willing to come back anytime. I appreciate it. In between then and now, you got a lot to sort out. You got a lot coming up.
Yeah.
So
yes, I do.
You're going to need a little bit, but yeah, I'd definitely like to get back to you by the beginning of the summer or maybe, in the middle of the summer, whatever. I got a lot of time then. You know, I don't really start filling urine or synthetic bottles probably to about right after the 4th of July, I start filling bottles. stores.
Okay.
And I start getting into it then. And then I get super busy because then it's filling the stores. So definitely something prior to that, or maybe, you know, middle of July, you know, I'll take like a week break. Go sure. down, sure, my family, I could spend an hour with you on here and definitely okay. do it.
Now, the beautiful thing is with the baby coming, I'm actually in a really great position because I have about 7 different episodes, including this one, on the back burner. I don't mean back burner like they're just sitting there. I mean, like, I've already recorded 7 that I'm ready to release.
Right.
And I only release one a week. That's so beautiful. So when the baby comes, if I'm too busy and I can't do it, that's fine. I have myself set up.
You're backed up, right.
Exactly.
That's good. That was a good way to think about it.
Yeah. Now, my last thing for you, and we were talking about this before the episode, the two big things that you've come up with in the last year as far as deer is concerned were your ropes, which you said you're going into your third year now. But the other is your drip bags.
Yes.
You know, which are in a sense, they're similar to the way the older, I don't know what company made them, but they had the drip bottles that you could put up that only dripped during the day, I guess, because
that's mock scrape. Those are mock scrape. Those are okay. specifically made for mock scrape. Drip bag is a mineral / salt lick. So it's okay. a completely different product.
So and it's not a scent. It's more of an attractant.
It's an attractant, but it's a scent because, like, you know, they'll come in apple flavored or green mm-hmm. apple or sweet corn or white oak acorn. They come in a ton of different flavors. And I do that to be very versatile so that guys from way, way down south, west, everybody has something. I found like even guys from Ohio like cherry for some reason. So I make mm-hmm. cherry ones. And they've been probably one of the hottest products I've put out, that not only the questions that came along with it, the sales that have came along with it. I've had stores sell 70 of them, 50 of them. I just brought them to one of these stores that I filled up here in Jersey maybe 10 days ago. And the guy called me, I need X amount more. They're gone. So I started incorporating them, not into just that, but I started making like a mineral kit. So when you buy the kit, there's one included in the kit. You'll get like molasses and mineral and a salt lick. And then you also get a drip bag in there too, plus the bucket, because it's all put in a bucket.
Yeah.
It's all scented. You know, they're going to be available in all my shops. I've been filling them for the last month now, and they're probably going to be filling for another month before I'm done with filling all the shops, especially some new shops that I'm getting into. But the drip bags were something that was in a magazine, probably in 84, 85. But it wasn't a drip bag. It was just something that you hang up. So me knowing that, I said to myself, well, how can I improve on something from 35, 40 years ago? What could I do differently with that specific product that was out in a magazine that I remembered from so many years later? So the idea isn't totally mine, but coming up with the different flavors and then coming up with what's in the bag is totally different than what was in theirs, because I remember having it and I remember what was in theirs. So I'm like, well, what could I do? Because I want it to be something that I really made, even though it's predicated off what something was there years ago, but that's different. And what could I do to change it? Well, whatever I put in the bag, because I'm not going to release, because I have people writing me, hey, what's in the bag? I'm not going to tell you my ingredients or what's in the bag. I'm not going to tell you. I can't imagine I get emails like that. Hey, what's in the bag? No, I'm not going to tell you. Buy it, and then you could try and figure it out, but it's still what's in it. You could figure some of it out, but not all of it. So
now on your, on,
so like, the bag sorry. Comes in, the bag itself comes in another bag. And then you have to fill that bag with a 1/2 gallon of water. And then mm-hmm. you shake the bag up, pour out the contents over a mineral site, over a block, over a salt lick, and then hang the bag up over it. Every time it rains, it's dripping. And the deer, once they pick up on it, it's like a magnet. They're there all mm-hmm. the time. You know, some people haven't had great success until later on in the season with it. Some people have had success all season with it. But what I did do is I made it so that it lasts between 4 to 8 months and sometimes longer. So nobody sells anything for $20 that lasts 4 to 8 months anymore. Bag of feed lasts you sometimes a day, maybe 2 days, depending on the animal. This lasts you 4 to 8 months. I can guarantee that, depending on rainfall. Some are less than a year. I got guys that are like, hey, I still got like stuff in mine. I want a couple new ones, but the old ones are still,
that's, you know, amazing.
They still got stuff in it. And nobody makes anything that lasts that long. But I found a way to do it.
Everyone loves a product. Everyone loves a product that sells itself. And, you know, and I'm not saying that as like a sales tactic for you.
Right.
I'm saying that hunters, if we talk to someone, they're like, man, I use this product. Not only did it work, it lasted.
Mm-hmm.
That right there is how you know that you're onto something.
Like if you buy one now and you put it up, it's going to still be up in October. Mm-hmm. It'll still be up in September. And again, that's a product that cuts off. Like it's even surprised me where I tell guys, hey, you know, probably around September 1st, they'll stop hitting it. And some guys had exactly that happen. But I've had guys that have happened that they're still using it in October, which mm-hmm. surprised me. because I wouldn't think that they, but no, I got pictures in mid and late October. I got different flavors that guys have tried out that I didn't think would even work for deer. And next thing I know, they're like one of the hottest products, or I wasn't even making them available on that. And someone asked me and then I gave it to them. They're like, bro, you got to make this and put this out there because this is working better than the apple, or the green apple's better than the sweet corn, or, you know, and it all comes down to what, you know, sometimes what guys want, not really what the deer want. So when you wet it, the scent stays there for a few days and then that's gone. Then it's just the product that's left in the bag. So what's in the bag that's bringing them back? And that's the key. So once it took me 2 years. This was a 2-year idea. It took me 2 years to perfect them. Not only did I have them on my own properties that I hunt, but I had them at my house. And then I started sending them out to other states. And when I seen what other states was doing, now I said to myself, wow, Mississippi, Vermont, New Hampshire, you know, Maine, the Midwest, I had, I don't know how many I sold over the last 2 weeks, Minnesota. I've been selling the states that I normally don't sell stuff to.
And these are online sales? Like they're going to your website and ordering them?
I'm only in stores, you know, in Pennsylvania, Jersey, and New York. And I'm probably going to drift out to maybe Maryland and Delaware a little, probably maybe this year, if not this year, definitely next year.
Okay. That'd be exciting, man. That's big stuff.
Yeah, but the drip bags are a huge thing. They work really well. Deer's bodies tell them what they need. This is something that they need.
So I'm gonna ask this question.
Videos and pictures don't lie. I have hundreds of them.
Oh yeah, you do. Anyone who follows your Instagram channel, I mean, even now there are deer hitting everything.
The biggest thing, and before you go, before you say what you have to say, the biggest thing is the mimicking of my product. And there's been companies already trying to mimic it. They ain't getting the success because I would see it on their pages. But people mimicking my products is the biggest issue I have. Go out there and think of something yourself. Don't think of what I do or someone else does. But that's just the way it is because everybody thinks about one thing. How much money can I put in my pocket? Screw that guy. I'll do whatever I want. And that's the biggest thing that follows me is the mimicking. Because I've had companies in PA try to mimic it or make their own. But I don't never see them. I don't never see any videos of what I have from, you know, all over because big guy upstairs is watching.
No. My question here, like I said, it's a 2-part question. The first part of that question is, are those drip bags considered a bait type of deal, like in a state like New York? That's question number one. And question number two is, when you have your attractant buckets, you know, those buckets that you sell that have a little bit of everything in them, do you have one synthetic and one natural for the two different types of states that allow synthetic or don't allow natural?
That product has nothing to do with synthetic. Synthetic is just for deer urines.
Okay.
Deer urine has got to be synthetic for the state, so it's not urine anymore. It's a synthetic. Mm-hmm. So that minerals and stuff like that aren't made synthetically.
Okay.
There's no difference in what I would sell to someone in a synthetic state or a regular state when it comes to mineral or salt licks or anything.
Gotcha. Now, what about in New York where you're not allowed to bait at all?
I went through this with New York, and I went through this with Pennsylvania. And I had to get in touch with the people in charge to make sure I was doing the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
New York, you can sell the product in New York as long as the hunters know that it's not to be used in New York. Because it is a bait, and they do not allow anything that an animal can go up to and get a health benefit from. New York does not allow that at all. So like I have a molasses spray. That is illegal to use in New York. Mm-hmm. It is molasses. If an animal walks up to it, there is a health benefit from it. But if you took my sweet corn attractant spray and sprayed it all over leaves and a deer went up to it and licked it, there's zero benefit in health. So I had to send it to New York to get tested. Wow. And then they came back and said, well, there's less than it. It's water and a scent and that's it. So it's legal. I went through that in PA to make sure that I could sell this in PA, but I could also have guys in PA use it. And again, that's the same that I had in New York. I had the same understanding of it in Pennsylvania. As long as there's no health benefit, the difference between New York don't even allow mineral or even a salt lick to be put out. Zero. Mm-hmm. Pennsylvania allows everything up to 30 days before hunting starts for them. Either it has to be taken out or dug out. But it can't be fed during hunting season.
Pennsylvania, it's my understanding, and I'm sure you would know the answer to this better than I, but it's my understanding that Pennsylvania does that to have it be more of a fair chase for all hunters. But New York doesn't allow any type of baiting or baiting site or anything like that, not because of that, but because they want to stop the spread of CWD.
Right.
That's my understanding for the two states.
And you know what? I'm going to cut my throat here, and I don't really care because I'm going to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
If Jersey cared about CWD, they would have stopped baiting and not deer lures. I've been using deer lure on my same properties for 40 years. I've never seen a case of CWD. Now, does it exist? Yes. Does it happen? Occasionally. but it's not happened enough in Jersey where we should have stopped using deer lure. If you were worried about it, you would have stopped baiting. But from top to bottom, Cape May to Sussex, west, east, and west, there's too many people, too many farmers, too many companies that sell corn, that sell product and make money off of.
100%. And it's not even good for them. Like we said earlier, it's not even good for them, all that corn.
So with that being said, if they cared about the deer, they would have stopped baiting. You'd breed a better hunter than you would, like you did in the 70s and 80s. We learned off deer trails. We weren't hunt or acorn trees or travel routes to cornfields that, you know, farmers put in. That's what they would have did. Instead, they did the thing that no one would fight about, because there's only 3 scent companies in the state that are actually deer lure deer companies in the state. There's 3, maybe 4. I think there's 3, though. There's actually 4, but the one guy doesn't own the company. He just sells it in the state. So if you really cared, you would have stopped that, and the deer lure was fine. We don't have an issue with that here. So I can argue that point with them till I'm blue in the face. I've tried this. I've went to a couple of meetings. I've argued my point, and they just want to make it look like they've done something to earn a check. That's why they did that.
Of course.
But if they really cared about the deer population, they would have stopped baiting. But there's too many people that would have fought back. And now you have generations that have now grown up in what? The baiting part of hunting that your state allows baiting. Because now tomorrow, if they stop baiting, you're still going to get 50% of the guys to bait no matter what.
Yeah. And now the look at New York. They're still baiting in New York. No one stopped.
Exactly my point. And listen, at the end of the day, if a field is not naturally growing corn, which they don't, then it's baiting. You can argue that all day long with guys that say, oh, baiting. But if the I food put in plots something that is same, not already, yeah. The acorn tree is not baiting. That grows there naturally. Corn does not grow there naturally. That is baiting. I don't care what you say. That is baiting. 100%. So then allow it or don't allow either one. But farmers have to have cornfields up. They have to sell product. They have to, you know, have soybeans, etc. So you're allowed to hunt over that, and it's not frowned upon as much as, say, baiting is. But baiting is a way to get people to take deer easily and to keep people interested. So it's a fine line. So I understand what they did and why they did it, but they didn't do it with the correct intentions. No. They did it with, we're just trying to get something done and make it look good. That's what they did.
Exactly. And the truth is, like, the screening in these natural urine attractants these days are so advanced that they can screen it and make sure that there's no CWD or any type of virus in there anyway.
These big companies that sell deer urine, that own deer urine farms, are tested.
Exactly.
And checked.
Exactly.
And these deer, in the 80s and 70s, you could have sold anything you wanted. Nothing was tested. Nobody cared. Exactly. And we got through those times. I'm not saying that CWD we don't have issues with it in pockets or blue tongue, but that was something else caused by a bug that we had a few years ago. That had nothing to do with baiting.
No,
but try and tell me that it was because of deer urine that, listen, you can make one mock scrape. How many deer are going to hit that scrape? 5, 6, 8? Put out a bunch of bait. You're going to have every deer in the woods hit it. Mm-hmm. They're congregating more together. So if you were worried about CWD, you would stop that and not deer lure.
And here's my thing, man. It's like, we're never going to stop deer from laying down sign. When you have a true community scrape, every deer in the community is going to that scrape. That's the point of it. So if they're doing it naturally and they're all congregating to the same spot, checking the same scent every single day, and if CWD, and now let me preface this, I'm not a biologist, I'm not a scientist, I don't,
neither like,
am I. I'm not a professional here, but my spidey senses are telling me that if it was passed on in this manner, then they would be doing it on their own simply by the way they behave in nature.
Yeah. I mean, breeding scrapes are huge, and you're going to have a lot of deer hit those breeding scrapes. There's no doubt. Most of the deer that are home range deer or a buck that may pass through every now and then because he's just on the hunt for does, they're going to check that breeding scrape. They all go through a breeding scrape. But not everybody has breeding scrapes. Sometimes you don't have the class of deer to even understand what a breeding scrape is. Sometimes you may have 300-400 acres and not even see one. They're the size of your car hood. They're huge. So if you're thinking one that's maybe a 5x5 is a breeding scrape, most likely it's not. It's not even big enough. Maybe 8x8, 7x7, you know, 10x10. I've seen them big. I get them every third, 3, 4, maybe 5 years, we get one on the property. So it's not a consistent thing that we get them. But I do notice that if you have a class of deer, 2, 3, 4, 5, that's when you see them.
The hierarchy.
The hierarchy.
What you need.
Yeah. There's no doubt.
All right, man. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. I think we were able to stay away from the business side of things, just like we had talked about. Hopefully, the listeners got a little bit of a different perspective. And I think you laid down some truth. You know, some things that other scent companies might be afraid to share. You know, and I think that speaks a lot to who you are as an individual.
Listen, for me, at my age, I don't need to prove to anything, anyone. I've been hunting my whole life. I've done nothing but hunting and have fun with it and love it and make a business into it where I spend a lot of my time where I should be in the tree, but I'm worried about other people getting deer and making stuff and meeting people and all that kind of stuff. So I love it. I want to see the state do well. I want to see bigger deer, better deer. I want to see everybody happy. And you can't make everybody happy. It's just impossible.
100%. All you could do is be true to yourself, be honest, be fair.
This state has got a population of bow hunters that are broken down into three sections, traditionals, compound, you know, crossbow guys. Mm-hmm. I don't have a problem with any of them. Like I told you earlier in the show, if you use my product and you killed it with a Toyota or threw a rock at it and killed it, I'm happy. My product worked. So I don't have that feeling. I'm happy that guys can get out there, that women are getting into it because it's easier for them to hunt with a crossbow. Or maybe a guy just isn't good with a bow and he's more accurate with a crossbow. So he's actually going to take the animal and not wound it.
That's
which
fair.
Is, again, bow, you know, you have to take that into consideration. And that, listen, there's probably 20% of the guys that work with their bows, maybe 30% all year long. Guys have lives. Once deer season hunts, they put that bow away. They don't see it until August. And that's probably 50% of the guys. So, you know, what are you going to be more proficient with if you're not practicing with it all year? You're going to be more proficient with a crossbow. Yeah. And I would rather see a guy take the deer, get some pictures, smile, be happy, then wound the deer, and then it runs into somebody's yard, and that lady now hates you because she's liberal, and she let you hunt before, but she thinks it's a disaster. I'd rather see that. And again, I visit all these bow shops. A lot of bow shops in New Jersey are having problems selling bows. Not all, but most. The economy's part of it. Crossbow sales have changed, you know, what bows are being made. We have about 10-12% of the guys hunt with traditional bows, and those guys are awesome. I love watching them. My cousin does it a lot. I'm getting into it now, traditional, a little bit more as I'm getting older. I'm starting to revert backwards, where
awesome.
I've gone to the peak all the way to crossbows. I went back to compound, and now I'm kind of getting traditional because I'm trying to test myself. And as I'm getting to these later years of hunting, I'm trying to just give more challenge to myself. I'd love to take a nice buck with the traditional bow, but I want to get proficient at it. You know?
And when you do, I can't wait to hear the story.
Yeah, I'm going to try. I'm going to try my hardest. I'd like to really do it this year. I really like to do it.
If our listeners want to follow you, you know, check out Rat Getters, see what you're all about. Where can they find you, whether it's social media,
it's
your website?
Ratgetterscents.net is my website. So if you're looking for product, you can go there. Also on there is a list of all the stores that I'm in three different states right now. If you're looking to follow social media, we're on TikTok, which is a tough place to run, but TikTok is what it is. But I am on TikTok. I answer all the questions. I talk to everyone on there. Instagram seems to be my main page, even though I had a following about 2.5 years ago of 37,000 people on there. It got reported and took it from me, so I had to restart the whole page again.
I was going to ask you what the 2.0
was all
about.
Yeah, I'm just 3,000 now, and I really don't pay or push or try to get any followers. I just let it flow by itself and whatever happens. And then you could also get me on Facebook at Rat Getter Scents. And there's no one that answers for any of the pages but me. I'm the one who posts everything on the pages. So if I misspelled something and someone don't like it, well, that's just the way it is. Or, you know, it is what it is. But it's always you're getting the owner, you're getting the guy who makes everything. And I always answer and talk to everyone. You know, hopefully guys will like what I'm saying and like my products. But I'm just trying to be honest about things. You don't need to be out there making mock scrapes in June. But that's just
for
my
sure.
view on it. Guys like to do it. Great. Buy it from me. I make good product. I think you'll have success with it. Save your money. Wait till hunting season, a week before, or so you could do that. I try to be honest. Like I said, I don't appreciate what the bigger companies have done because I just think they're just trying to put more money in their pocket instead of really helping them work out. That's just my.
Yeah. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is Gerard of Rat Getter Scents in a nutshell, if you will. Again, I want to thank you so much for joining us here today. This is a great conversation. I learned a lot. Hopefully the listeners and the viewers got a little bit of a different perspective and learned a little bit along the way as well. And guys, those of you listening, if you did learn something new or if you have any questions for myself or Gerard, scroll on down to the bottom there. If you're listening on Apple Podcasts, at the bottom, leave a nice 5-star review and a little written review if you can as well. If you have any questions, that's one of the places you can leave them. You can email myself at wingandtail.chris@gmail.com. or you can reach me again at Instagram or YouTube. Anywhere you reach out, again, I'll be the one answering that. If you have any questions for Gerard, I can forward them to him as well. And maybe we'll have a list of questions for you next time you join us here on the show, man.
Great. It was great, Chris. Thank you so much for everything. Yeah. Best of luck with the baby coming.
Thanks so much, brother. We'll be in touch soon. Until next time, guys, remember, success is just a commitment away. Have a great week.
Where's your playlist taking you? Down the highway? To the mountains? Or just into daydream mode while you're stuck in traffic? With over 4,000 hotels worldwide, Best Western is there to help you make the most of your getaway, wherever that is. Because the only thing better than a great playlist is a great trip. Life's the trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.